This is Please Explain. I'm Tori Maguire. It used to be as easy as ABC, but somewhere along the way, did we forget what's important in educating our kids? For a while now, we've all had a sense that the stress-fuelled race to an Australian tertiary admission rank wasn't setting up Australian kids for productive futures. Now, the most comprehensive review of the New South Wales schooling system in 30 years has recommended scrapping the ranking altogether. It's called for major changes to the HSC and a back-to-basics approach to student learning. It includes refocusing primary school content on literacy, numeracy, and emotional development, and a greater emphasis on minimum standards. One of the biggest shifts would be restructuring learning around attainment levels rather than year levels, creating benchmarks that measure long-term student progress independent of their age or year. This week on Please Explain, we're going back to basics. Is the old school new again? Joining me is the Sydney Morning Herald's education editor, Jordan Baker, the Age's education editor, Adam Carey, and later on, I'll be talking to Professor Jeff Masters from the Australian Council for Education Research, the author of this new draft report. Adam and Jordan, thanks so much for joining Please Explain. We are here today to talk about Australian schooling and whether we need to completely rethink the way we educate our kids from kindergarten right through to year 12. This is prompted by the publication of an interim review into the New South Wales schooling system and the higher school certificate that has come out this week, Jordan, that you've reported on. The extent of my knowledge about schooling is based on the fact that I went to school quite a long time ago and that I now have kids in early primary school. So I don't know much about what doing the HSC or the Victorian equivalent, which is the VCE. What's that like? What do kids go through at the moment when they're doing this?
Oh, look, I think it's probably similar to when you were at school in the sense that it's a pretty intense experience. There are, big exams, big stakes, like it is the first truly high stakes exam these kids will ever do, and probably the most high stakes exam they'll ever do. There's a lot riding on it, and it's a lot of work. Bits and pieces have changed since we were at school. There is a wider range of subjects. There are vocational subjects now, much more than when we were there.
What does that mean?
It means that basically in New South Wales, there is a division between the so-called academic subjects and the vocational subjects. So the academic subjects are things like, extension maths, ancient history, a lot of languages. Vocational subjects are hospitality. You can do retail, really sort of applied subjects. Now, the thing is that on the basis of your moderated HSC marks, the universities will calculate a ranking, which used to be in our day the TER, is now the Australian Tertiary Admissions Ranking. There are only certain subjects that will qualify you for an ATAR. So you have to do a certain number of Category A, which is the academic subjects, to get an ATAR. If you opt for mostly vocational subjects, you won't get an ATAR. So you're really deciding in year 10 when you choose your
subjects.
It's
locking people in pretty early to a potential career, isn't it?
Yeah, you're deciding then and there whether you want to go for the university path or not.
And do they do big exams as well in the vocational subjects?
Yeah. So they're all sitting their exams at the moment. But with the vocational subjects, there is a lot more applied learning during the senior schooling and even some elements of the middle high school years. So if you're doing hospitality, there'll be a lot more kind of actual hands-on hospitality work involved. A lot of schools, offer some sort of childcare units. There's an entertainment industry stuff you can do, which is all involves actual on-the-job kind of learning. So one of the recommendations of the curriculum review is that those two types of subjects aren't so siloed anymore, and that academic subjects will have a lot more applied learning involved with them, and that the vocational subjects will have a lot more kind of theoretical.
Okay. What's it like in Victoria, Adam? Is there these exams at the end of year 12 that kids just think are the most important things in their lives?
Yes, and they're in the thick of it right now. That it's exam period in Victoria. The big one, which is the English exam, is on next week. There'll be something like 50,000 students sitting that one. And it's still, I think a lot of it is still, hasn't changed. It's still getting all these kids in a big hall, pen and paper. You've got your 2 hours. You've got your questions. It's high pressure stuff. And you've got that, those sort of 2 hours of truth, and you have to perform. And if you've had a bad night's sleep or so on, it can really have a big impact on how you go. So there's huge stress at the moment. For example, I had a recent experience where I wrote a story about a call by Australia's chief scientist to do away with ATAR, which inadvertently sent the word ATAR viral on Twitter, with a whole lot of students from last year basically talking about PTSD, having seen the word ATAR in their feeds. So, you know, this is really high stakes for students, and it creates a lot of stress that it's like all coming towards this point. And you've got this week, we've had some sort of muck up day mishaps. There's that side of it as well, where people are basically torn between having this celebration of, wow, school is over, but also this really intensive period of exam cramming. So those things were ever thus.
I know some people who are still traumatised by Jacaranda's flowering. Because
that
exam
happens
time.
In Sydney.
Yeah,
exam
in Sydney
time.
And in Brisbane and potentially in Victoria, like the Jacaranda's main exams are coming.
Maybe those people need a bit of perspective.
Yeah, my dad is still like that, though, when he's 70. Anyway, there is a slight difference now, though, from when we were at uni, when we went to school and did our HSC. Because back then, about 20% of kids went to uni.
Mm.
Now, far more do it. I think it's around 50%, correct me if I'm wrong, Adam. And there is many, many, many more options. There are kids who get pre-HSC offers from university.
Right.
It's not as hard to get into university as it used to be. So in a lot of ways, that kind of pressure is not so intense if that's the path that you're choosing to take.
But that potentially, look, and it's probably a topic for another day, has a whole impact on the standards at the universities too. Let's talk about this review that was, this draft report was written by Jeff Masters. He's the CEO of the Australian Council for Educational Research. It's pretty much recommending we rip up the New South Wales school system as we know it. He wants to scrap the TER, the tertiary entrance rank, for universities. He wants to bring the academic and vocational training much closer together. He wants to tailor education to individual children's needs. He wants to focus in early years on literacy, numeracy, and emotional development. It's a huge sort of bringing together of something that people have really been talking about anecdotally for years. I mean, we've known for a long time that the HSC and the VCE system are not ideal, and our global rankings in education are going down. Has there been any recommendations this comprehensive before, Jordan?
Well, a lot of the stuff that Professor Masters has written in the review for the younger years of schooling, so I'm talking sort of before years 11 and 12, is stuff that has already been floated by, for example, the Gonski Excellence Review, which was handed down last May. So in that, David Gonski and his review panel recommended a focus on each child's individual learning progression, because at the moment you can have wildly different standards within the same class. Like, I'm talking, you know, they can be years apart within the same year. And their emphasis was trying to get like a year's worth of learning for each student, regardless of where they are at. So
it's about growth.
It's about growth. And there is already work done in New South Wales on what they call learning progressions in literacy. There's a national effort to write out some learning progressions that fit the national curriculum as well. So this sort of stuff is happening. It's cutting edge kind of stuff. It's not the sort of stuff that's really been tested in big school systems before, as I understand it. There are some problems with it. Some of the problems that have emerged already from the learning progressions in New South Wales is teacher workload. I mean, the workload depends on how much you have to document each student's progress. So if I've got 30 students, they probably wouldn't all be at different levels, but say I've got four groups of students at different levels. Am I having to assess them all before they move on to the next level? How much data do I have to keep about where they're at?
And how do you teach different children at a different level at the same time in the same classroom?
Well, that's a process known as differentiation. So most teachers do that already because the fact that the kids are at different levels,
they know
has been you know, around since time immemorial. But having to actually monitor this, having to diagnose where they're at when they're ready to move on, can lead to a whole bunch of workload issues. So in New South Wales, the Teachers Federation the other day told me that, you know, learning progressions are now a swear word in classrooms because the teachers feel so overwhelmed by that. Okay. So how this system of attainment levels actually works in practice is going to be the real question because a lot of people say that if you're going to do it very sort of scientifically and rigorously, it's going to need a vast amount of resourcing. And we've already got resourcing issues in schools. The government's, you know, increased its spending on schools by a lot, but this would require a lot. Yeah. So that is going to be one of the big questions about how rigorously this is going to be applied. So that's one issue. The other issue is the back to basics thing, paring back the curriculum, focusing on depth in those areas, important areas, rather than putting a whole bunch of things into the curriculum, again, is something that has been talked about for a while. But the question is, what do you throw out? Every two teachers are going to have a different view of what needs to be in the history curriculum, what isn't. So that's going to be quite a fraught process, I think.
Yeah. Adam, is there any move in Victoria for any major wide-scale changes to the education system like the ones in this review for New South Wales?
Nothing as dramatic as throw the whole thing out, tear it all up and start again. But there are some significant, I guess, reforms happening, particularly in the area of testing and how we assess students' academic progress. NAPLAN, there's a whole lot of soul searching going on around NAPLAN. Victoria's part of this breakaway review. New South Wales and Queensland, the three big states, have all teamed up against the feds and threatened to throw that whole testing regime out, saying that, you know, after 10 years, there are signs that it's seriously fraying. To me, that raises an interesting question. Is it the testing regime that is the problem, or is it more what the tests are telling us that's sort of causing this soul searching? You know, there's been a sort of a flatlining of progress among year nines, particularly in the NAPLAN testing, which has led to all sorts of questions of, okay, well, what's going on there? Is it that year nine's sort of the bad year where kids are not engaged in schooling, they don't take the test seriously? Can we find ways to motivate them better? One suggestion that the Education Minister James Molino raised here was to introduce a proficiency certificate for the year nine NAPLAN results, which is essentially something that would be a score that prospective employers could see, and they would see how you performed in your literacy and numeracy. There's also a test that is done in year 12, the general achievement test, which is not part of your assessment, but every student has to sit it. And that's also because it's not something that goes towards your VCE mark. It's not always taken very seriously. So they're trying to raise the stakes by also scoring that, even for students who currently do an unscored VCE, which is something that has become increasingly a popular option in Victoria. People who don't want the stress of going for an ATAR, they do the curriculum, they do the syllabus, but they don't get a score. They get basically a pass or a not a pass at the end. This new mark in the general achievement test will give them a pass that any prospective employer can see. And that's come out of some industry concerns that there are some people who are graduating from VCE whose literacy and numeracy skills are at a standard that isn't really fit for the workplace. So there is quite a bit of soul searching going on at the moment in terms of, well, is the current setup fit for purpose? But Jordan raised some interesting points earlier about some of it is sort of more prosaic than just what's in the curriculum. It's in terms of achieving educational outcomes. It's like, are there enough teachers? We've got a severe teacher shortage in some areas, particularly in maths and history, are two subjects where the number of qualified teachers who are available to take a class are nowhere near the demand. And so you've got this situation of what's called out-of-field teachers who aren't qualified in that area having to take those subjects. This is a really severe problem in a lot of rural and regional areas. I've spoken to principals who say that in subjects like technology, they're consistently just cancelling class. It's sort of that grim. One thing that the government's doing here is sort of they're throwing money at that problem. They've got this new initiative of a teacher who's prepared to go bush could get up to $50,000 in financial, you know, payments, which is a pretty compelling prospect, I guess, for someone on a teacher's wage. You could probably buy a house with, you know, $50,000 and get into the property market. So these are some of the things that are going on here.
So plenty of commentators like to moan about teacher quality. Is that a real issue? Are people coming out of teachers' college?
Well, one of the issues.
Innumerate and illiterate.
I think there's probably there may be some. They're not all of them. Most teachers are, you know, well qualified. And the other thing is that, you know, just because a teacher comes out of a teaching degree doesn't mean they necessarily get a job. So you've then got the sort of quality control of the hiring process of the department, which has been sort of tightened in New South Wales. One issue is, though, that we don't necessarily know, because there's no kind of across-the-board rigorous quality checks done, for example, by the New South Wales department. And and in New South Wales, there's a teacher workforce of 100,000. Mm. So there's going to be some fantastic teachers within that, and there's going to be some not very good ones, just the same as there's probably fantastic journalists and not very good ones.
Yeah, and there's no benchmarking.
Well, a recent Auditor General's report did basically say that there wasn't a great process within the department of monitoring teacher quality. So that's an issue. And as Adam said, there's also shortages of librarians and language teachers. You know, one of the recommendations from Professor Masters was that they teach a language in every primary school, which is a fantastic idea, except when you don't have any teachers.
So finally, you two, things have changed an enormous amount in the 30 years since the last time there was a review like that. Our economy is wildly different. Our workplace is different. There's different pressures, but school hasn't changed that much, really. There's not a huge difference between what we went through when we did the HSC and what kids are going through now. How much political will do you think there is to actually overhaul the education system?
So one of the big problems with education, as you referred to at the beginning of your of this conversation, everyone's been to school.
So we're all experts.
We're all experts. Yeah. It's like everyone who reads the newspaper is an expert on what it likes to be a journalist. You know, we've got kids at school. People are very, very invested, and a lot of people don't like school to be any different to it was when we knew it, because they want to, you know, a familiar environment for their kids. But there's a massive range of views, even among teachers, from progressivists who just want to tear up everything and start again, to other people who are very concerned at the fads that seem to pass through education so quickly, and the fact that there's only sort of quite recently started to be kind of randomised control group studies of the sort of interventions that actually work in education. And there has been a trend over the past few decades to, you know, rush towards a shiny new thing. So some people are saying, look, you know, Professor Masters' report was a solid, it was a comprehensive report. It made some suggestions, but let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. Let's not have a situation, for example, like, you know, a few decades ago when they decided to stop teaching grammar and now no one can construct a sentence. Do you know what I mean? Like, because the decisions that are made now will affect the students coming out of the system in 20 years, and we don't want to mess it up. You know what I mean? Because if we mess it up, there can be some big problems.
So incremental change over revolution.
Incremental change, evidence-based change, consensus change, yeah, and nothing too radical.
But we can't, Adam, get away from the fact that any improvement is just going to cost an absolute truckload of money, isn't it?
Well, I wonder about, I guess, the proposition that school hasn't really changed. I think about the added pressure of technology, things like social media, cyberbullying and distraction from mobile phones.
I definitely think society's changed. It's just whether education has kept up with it.
Yeah, that's, well, I guess that's one area that's really at the sort of the bleeding edge of that, so to speak, is you've got this thing in your pocket that you take home with you where you don't necessarily get away from the school environment, because it can still, and I think these are some of the, I guess, the questions that educators have to grapple with as well. When you talk about a back to basics curriculum, there's nothing basic about being a kid going through school. There's extraordinary pressures and society's changing really quickly. And the school environment needs to meet that challenge.
So finally, would you put yourself through the HSC again?
I still have nightmares when I'm anxious. I have a nightmare about my HSC 3 at maths exam and walking in and knowing nothing. So not in a million years.
Yeah, but I think I'd go for the unscored VCE.
Yeah, but my son is six. Your son is five. In the 10 years we're talking about now, they will be starting their HSC or in the middle of their HSC. So decisions that are made now are going to be affecting them. So, you know, as parents of kids who will be the guinea pigs for this, let's just keep an eye on it, you know what I mean? And don't worry, the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age will be doing that for you.
Excellent. That is a great note to end on. Thanks, Jordan and Adam.
Thank you very much.
That was Education Editor Adam Carey from The Age and Education Editor Jordan Baker from the Sydney Morning Herald. Very soon, I'll be talking to Professor Jeff Masters from the Australian Council for Education Research.
Hi, Ross Gittins of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. There's a whole internet of facts and opinions about the economy out there. How are you supposed to know what to believe and what not to believe, what's worth your attention and what isn't? If you're short of time, my advice is find a news outlet and commentators you know you can trust and don't fret about the rest. If you know you can trust us, we'd like you to support us by subscribing today.
You're listening to Please Explain. I'm Tori Maguire, and joining me now on the phone is Professor Jeff Masters from the Australian Council for Education Research, whose report suggests sweeping changes of the New South Wales school curriculum. Jeff, thanks so much for joining me on Please Explain. You have authored the first review in 30 years into New South Wales's kindergarten to year 12 education system. 30 years is a long time, and a huge amount about the world has changed in that period. How much about schooling and the way our kids are educated has changed over that 30 years?
Well, there's been significant change, obviously, in the broader society. And there have been changes within the school system itself. So there have been reviews of particular aspects of the curriculum, but this is the first review of the entire curriculum. But certainly there are ongoing changes in schools.
So this is going to sound terribly self-referential, but since I finished Year 12 in the early 90s, what sort of differences are there between what I experienced and what kids who are doing the HSC in 2019 experience at school?
Well, much of the study is still the same, with a focus on school subjects, and my interim report is not suggesting that we move away from a focus on teaching and learning of school subjects. But what teachers are telling me in this review process is that we need also to be developing student skills in applying their knowledge. So they need to learn not only how to remember and reproduce what they're taught, but how to apply it in practical contexts. And they need to develop skills in doing that. So skills in using technologies, obviously, skills in thinking creatively and critically about what they're learning, skills in solving problems, in working with others. So it's these more general kinds of skills that teachers are telling me we now need to be prioritising.
And are we not prioritising them at the moment? I mean, what is it about the sort of inevitable march towards the HSC exams that means that kids are actually just learning how to reproduce the answers in an exam rather than use critical thinking?
Well, teachers are doing what they can, of course, and are doing a good job to prioritise the development of these skills. But they're working within the constraints of a curriculum that has certain expectations. There are expectations about the amount of content that teachers will cover and students will learn. There are the constraints of the external examinations in the senior years of school that students are preparing for. So all these things can work against making the time and prioritising student skills in applying what they're learning.
Okay, so before we start talking about what you're recommending, can you just give me an overview of what the result of our current system is? How are Australian children performing on, you know, key metrics compared to their overseas peers?
We do know quite a lot about the performance of Australian students because we participate in international studies like the OECD's PISA program and the IEA's TIMS and PEARLS programs. These are programs that assess usually reading, mathematics, sometimes science. And of course, we have our own NAPLAN program here in Australia. What we can see from the international studies is that there's been no significant improvement in the performance of Australian students over the last couple of decades. At 15 years of age, there's actually been a decline in reading literacy, in mathematical literacy, and in scientific literacy. So there's some evidence, pretty clear evidence, of a decline. Australia has gone from being one of the highest performing countries back in the year 2000 to now being around about the OECD average.
And do you think there's danger that we could slip below the average?
Well, I would hope not. There's a trend line that has us heading towards the OECD average.
Okay. So what to do about it? This is a draft report that was commissioned by the New South Wales government. So obviously there's going to be a lot of politics involved in which parts of this are taken up and which not. But let's talk about the ideal world. You have suggested that the Australian Tertiary Admission Rank, the TER, is problematic. What is it about that is a problem?
Well, teachers talk to us about this, and I think universities too see that there's an issue here. The ATAR has become the single measure for many students and many parents, the single measure of performance at school, and it overshadows the HSC in that sense. So many students are very focused on acquiring the knowledge that they'll need to be able to demonstrate in final examinations to maximise their ATAR. Some students are gaming the system in the sense that they are choosing subjects not because they're good at them or because they're interested in them, but because they think this is the way to maximise their ATAR. So there's a kind of narrow focus for many students. The learning they're doing is very narrowly focused often on acquiring the knowledge that will maximise ATAR. And of course, there needs to be good evidence available to universities to select students and to make sure that that's done fairly. But what I've suggested in this interim report is that we look at whether there's a way of reducing the focus that's currently given to ATAR as that single measure of student performance.
Are there good examples around the world of other systems that have managed to do this, where kids are being taught in a way that is more about learning to think and getting the skills rather than just the exam results?
Well, certainly many countries are now very focused on the kinds of skills and the kinds of attributes that they believe students are going to require to be successful in their future. And so this very strong focus on knowledge, discipline knowledge, while that's important, it's not sufficient. We need also to be thinking about how we prepare students for work with the kinds of skills and capabilities, attributes that are going to equip them for work and for life more generally beyond school.
So how should universities be selecting students out of high school?
Well, I'm not. My review doesn't actually address that question because it's not part of my terms of reference. But what we know is that universities are now taking account of a much broader range of evidence than just ATAR. And that's not always well understood, I think, that ultimately what determines a person's selection into a tertiary course is the course selection rank, which almost always includes ATAR in its calculation, but it often includes other evidence as well. Universities are taking account of a broader range of evidence, and I think that's going to continue. That trend will continue.
I think one of the things that jumped out in the coverage of this report to me and probably lots of other parents was the suggestion that in the early years, literacy and numeracy and emotional development should be prioritised. Can we talk about the emotional development side of things for a minute? It's a very complicated question, isn't it? How responsible schools are, really, for children's emotional development.
Yes, exactly. But again, what many teachers were saying to me in the consultations is that they realise that they need to pay more attention to things that are outside the specified syllabuses. They need to be thinking about student wellbeing, their social development, their emotional development. These are things they're doing already. It's especially important that these things are addressed early in the school system. So what I've said in my interim report is that there needs to be, again, a prioritising of these basics of literacy, you know, being able to read, basics of mathematics in the early years, because if students slip behind in those early years, often they stay behind or they fall further behind. And I've included in that paying attention to students' social and emotional development, which teachers do, but we just need to recognise that those things need to be addressed early in the school system.
People have such different opinions on school readiness and when children should start school, and it all, anecdotally to me, seems to be based on gut feeling of whether a child is ready for school. Do you think that there needs to be clearer guidelines about where a child is, not based necessarily on their age, but on their ability to take in information and control themselves?
Yes, I haven't addressed that question directly of starting age, but running through my report is really this position that I've taken, that it's important to establish and understand where individual children are in their learning and development. That should inform decisions that are made about what they're taught and what they're ready for. There are some children who are starting school and, you know, entering kindergarten who probably would be better still in a play-based environment rather than having to deal with the kindergarten curriculum. But it's what the point I'm making is it's a case-by-case decision. That the decision needs to be made on the basis of where individual children are up to, rather than what we do throughout the school system, which is to make decisions based on children's ages.
Jeff, I want to talk to you just about teachers, because your report suggests that curriculum and teaching needs to potentially be tailored more towards individual children's needs. Teachers are already incredibly stretched. They already work enormous hours. They only have a certain amount of time. How much change to the way teachers are trained and educated themselves and then resourced would your recommendations require?
Well, I think it does have significant implications for teaching, but I guess I'd like to start by saying teachers currently are doing an excellent job. Where they can, they are working to ensure that they understand and are meeting the needs of the students in their care. But again, it has to be said that they're working within the context of a specified curriculum. So teachers are saying to me, we have a lot of material we have to cover. We have very limited time to cover that. We have to race to get through it. And one of the consequences sometimes is that we're not able to pay attention in the way that we'd like to the needs of individual children. There are children who are slipping behind simply because I have to get through all this syllabus content. Or there are children who are more advanced in their learning who probably would benefit from being extended and given more challenging material. But there's a limit to how much I can differentiate my teaching according to where children are at in their learning, because my job is to deliver this curriculum and get through it. So teachers are doing what they can currently, but they work within the constraints of a pretty crowded curriculum, and a curriculum that is structured by age, essentially. So teachers are being given syllabuses that are designed for age groups or year levels, and are being told that their job is to teach that content to everybody of that age, everybody in that year level. And again, just making the point that that doesn't serve the needs of all students well. There are some students who would benefit from more challenging material. There are some children who are so far behind in their learning that they're not able to engage productively with the syllabus that teachers are being told they need to teach on the basis of the child's age.
Jeff, just finally, your report is talking about really a revolution in schooling right from kindergarten through to year 12. This revolution would take an enormous amount of political will, long-term thinking and investment. How important do you think it is that we address this now, given the changes that are taking place in our economy?
Look, I think it's absolutely crucial that we address these issues. The rest of the world, or many other countries that I'm familiar with, are very focused on rethinking how they run schools, how the curriculum is specified. They recognise that the world is changing rapidly, that we can no longer afford to have students leaving our schools with low levels of skill, because those low-skill occupations are being lost to technologies that are doing the jobs rather than people doing them. They're being lost to low-wage countries. And so if we're graduating students from our schools, as we currently are, many students with unacceptably low levels of skill and knowledge, there's a real risk that they will end up being disadvantaged in the workplace and possibly unemployed through much of their lives. So the new challenge, I believe, is to ensure that every student reaches levels of attainment that are currently being reached by only a proportion of the age cohort. And that's absolutely crucial. It's crucial for us as a nation, for our economy and our productivity, but it's equally important for individuals who will need to work in that new economy.
Jeff, thanks so very much for joining me on Please Explain.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks to our Please Explain guests this week, reporters Jordan Baker and Adam Carey, and education professor Jeff Masters. Please Explain is brought to you by the newsrooms of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. Subscriptions power our newsrooms, so to support independent journalism, search Subscribe Sydney Morning Herald or The Age. This episode of Please Explain was produced and edited by David Escort, Nicole Presell and Leah Samoglu. Technical assistance by David McMillan and Cormac Lally. Amelia Maguire manages logistics and planning, and Tom McKendrick is our head of audio. I'm Tori Maguire. Thanks for listening.